We are building the faith technology platform for the faith and flourishing ecosystem. We're at a Gutenberg moment. The printing press, Martin Luther, the confluence of those changed history. And will we, with this powerful technology cycle of the modern digital age with AI, are we the church going to be captivated, accelerated by that, mission empowered by that? Or are we going to be sitting on the outside, you know, watching the implications that it has on society? With Glue, we're trying to position ourselves. We are riding that wave, shaping that wave, and making these incredible capabilities suitable, useful for the faith ecosystem.
Bold visionaries, faithful disruptors. Some call them crazy, but they are called to create. Under His Power, for His Glory, the Faith-Driven Entrepreneur Podcast.
Guys, welcome back to Faith-Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. We have a special episode. We're in Boulder, Colorado here today, and we get to spend some time with a leader of the movement who over the last 20 years has been faithfully pioneering this conversation of what does it look like to be on this journey with Christ, and what does it look like to bring Him into our work and everything that we're doing with it, and then what does it look like to connect the body of Christ together in this moment that we're in. So thrilled to have Pat Gelsinger with us. Let's go ahead and get started with today's episode. One of the fun things about this conversation, this movement about faith-driven entrepreneurship is just saying this is something that's been happening really for hundreds of years, but specifically, both of us have been in this conversation for the past 20 years. And I think about your book, Juggling Act. For one, I think people need to appreciate that was 20 some odd years ago, I think, when you first came out. Mm-hmm. How have you seen things change from that book to today?
You know, I'd say in some ways, you know, one of the first surprising things is, you know, people still resonate with the message, right? You know, this idea of, oh, how do I make things fit, right? You know, faith and work and, you know, and my family. And, you know, so there is still a lot of resonance to the core messages, right? It's still, you know, not that I worry about book sales, but it's sort of like it just sort of stays, you know, at this very steady level. You know, second is, I'd also say, you know, that there is almost a presumption in the next generation of leaders that you're going to be able to make money.
Yeah.
Right, you're not sort of worried about, you know, can I be successful? Mm. Now there's much more, okay, how am I being successful? You know, what's the greater merit, impact, cause, vision, implications of that? So I'll say there's a much more almost, you know, I'll use a Christian term, soulful expectation associated with the presumption of business success.
Yeah.
You know, going forward and what the implications of that are. And, you know, in many ways, I consider that a very good, you know, generational. Okay. Yeah. You know, if I could be successful, but now how does that impact the world? How does that impact the community or so on? So, you know, seeing a fundamental shift in that, you know, regard. I also say in next generation entrepreneurs, they're not religious, but they're spiritual. You know, there's a deeper spiritual expectation associated, you know, with them. And, you know, they really do care in that sense about what the right impact of life and, you know, what, you know, some of these deeper soul questions mean. And I'd say in that sense, I'm actually, you know, every once in a while, I'm in some of the conversations with them, I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Right?
You know, and other times I really sort of say, man, I'm glad you're talking about that.
Do you feel like one of the encouraging things for me is it feels like that we're in this process where the idea of wealth is being redefined. We used to look at it in a numerical sense. I think that there's this conversation that seems to be getting louder, that it's really talking about a freedom to do things that matter, pursue things that matter. It really is, as you said, there's some presumption of like, hey, we're going to make money. The question is not that, it's what are we going to do? What's going to fulfill that calling buck? Do you feel like that that's something that's changing, like the definition of wealth is being redefined?
Yeah, I do think there, I think it'd be too optimistic to say there's a redefinition of wealth.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a broadening of the definition of wealth, right? You know, okay, money's still at the center of it, but how am I using the money? What are the implications of the money, right? You know, how do I use that money to bring about a broader agenda? What are the values of the company that I'm building? So I'm actually pleasantly surprised and somewhat pleased to see that broadening definition. Yeah. Now, in many regards, I think there's still a gross naivete,
yeah,
right, underlying it of, okay, what does philanthropy mean? You know, how do I really use these capabilities? What are the causes I want to get behind? So I'll say there's a hunger for it, but still a fairly naive perspective on how to make that real, practical, sustainable.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that when I first read Juggling Act, like that for me, the thing that I resonated with, and I heard this recently with friends like Tim Tebow, they're talking about like, I don't want to get to heaven well-rested. And there's kind of this idea of like, we've bought this perspective of a balanced life. It's got to be perfect. It's got to line up in these even compartments and even wheel that you never want to get out of balance. But yet you've heard people recently say, I don't want to live a balanced life. I want to live an unbalanced life in some ways, but for the things that matter. It feels like that was kind of the one of the things. There's other things that we'll get to. Mm-hmm. But how have we made this balanced life kind of this like false dichotomy, it feels like, that we're chasing after?
Yeah, and there is a view, I'd say, that the first version, right, of the book was Balancing Faith, Family, and Work. The second version was Juggling Act. And Juggling Act to me is a bit more apropos, right? Because you're not in balance,
yeah,
right? You know, I'm choosing in this period to be more focused on the balls over here versus the balls over here. And, there's a more intentionality associated, with the capabilities, the resources, how I apply my, talents. There's still, do I have time for the kids? Am I investing in their life or, my spouse and, those aspects. But the purpose and the, focus of how, my career now is being exercised or how I enjoy rest, right? This is definitely a generational shift.
Yeah.
In that regard. And, I finished that assignment. I'm going to take a year off.
Yeah. Right?
I would never dream, I took a day off between jobs. So like, what are you talking about? Right.
Yeah.
There's a much more comfort with, I'm going to, think about things on a much broader time scale. Mm-hmm. Right. And then, and I have, certainly, for me and how I'm built, and I think more generationally is more urgency. No, we can't rest a minute.
Yeah. Take that in the perspective of the season of life you're in. You talked about it a little bit there. What season of life does God have you in?
Well, this was a painful transition from Intel, mm-hmm. right? I had worked uninterrupted 45 years. Not a single day was I not in a major operational role. Not mm-hmm. one day for 45 years. All of a sudden, okay, what do I do? just unnerved, unplugged, unconnected, and didn't have that center anymore. I did about 100 interviews over 100 days, right? Private equity, venture capital, government roles, university roles, new operational roles, 100 different of those, and landed, to be investing and glue and, helping to get it to the point that it can be a public, sustainable faith technology, company, and then investing in a playground and, have, 6-7 companies, probably gets up to 10 or 12 that I'm investing, in making those leaders successful. As I would say, hey, I want to have a basket of very successful companies, but even more important, with very successful leaders, right? Taking my hands off the steering wheel, I'm in charge. I was in a meeting with one of my portfolio companies and one of the senior senators, I realized I did all the talking for the first 6 or 7 minutes of the meeting, and then I looked at the CEO. I said, "What are you doing here?" Right? It's like okay, I'm having to adjust to not being in charge.
Yeah.
But also spending more time with family, having more, renewal, reflection time, being able to choose where I can see that I make disproportionate impacts. Today, I launched a Bible study this morning for next generation leaders. We had about 150 generation leaders on a call this morning. And, how can I be a bit more focused on that progression, as a family focused on multi-generational philanthropy, you know, where we've now moved some of our charities to our kids for them to be responsible for. And, you know, the money, you know, still comes from the estate, but now they're responsible for, you know, those relationships. And of course, you know, building into the lives of our 8 grandchildren.
Yeah.
And,
so great.
You know, they're, you know, Papa, let's go do this. Just you and me, right?
Fun season. When you talk about that, how did that season kind of really just kind of give you a deeper appreciation for the things that you've talked about identity? It's not in our calling. It's great to be all in on something, but how did that experience enrich some of those principles for you?
Well, you know, the first was, you know, this wasn't my schedule.
Yeah.
Okay. God. You know, when we get to heaven, Jesus and I are going to have a one-on-one, right? We're going to talk about this for a while.
Calendar's got out of sync somewhere.
Yeah. You know, this was not the plan. This was not the time, you know, and so on. So, you know, obviously it was the plan and it was the timing, but it certainly wasn't aligned with my expectations, right, of how it occurred. So that abruptness, you know, really forced me to step back and look at things through a different lens. I also don't think I'm quite done with the learnings and healings. You know, one of the things I would say when you go through a very hard, difficult experience, don't minimize the learnings from it, right? You know, it just takes a while, right? You know, and you're just trying to seep more of that. Okay, God, what is the character, right, that you're changing in me? What are the opportunities that you're presenting to me? Mm. And certainly for somebody like me, you know, 45 consecutive years, not one day.
Yeah.
Wow, slowing down and, you know, not having my days full.
Hard to do.
Oh, wow, that's pretty uncomfortable, you know, for me. So, you know, really making sure that you harvest enough from those, you know, painful, challenging, difficult, you know, learning, growth periods of time, that you really have brought all of that back into making me the full creation that God is intending me to be in this season. And very hard to do that. Right, you know, because you know, you either want to close the door and move on, right, you know, or it's sort of like, okay, you know, I've got it all, God, I'm good, you know, let's move on, you know, the next thing. And often God's time on these types of transitions and periods just ain't your time, right, you know, for it. You know, also, you know, in it, it also is being able to be okay. You know, my name, you know, has been in the public over this transition and Intel and semiconductors and so on, almost every day, right, across every major newspaper of some sort across the world. Okay, man, I was like tired, you know, please, you know, can't we move on? Well, no, we can't move on, right? You know, it's still this active dialogue, right? You know, and some days those things grieve me. And other days it's sort of like, okay, God, I really want to see, you know, the full, right, experience that you're bringing about as a result of this. You know, and then finally, you know, for it, it's like, man, what a great, you know, I now have 10 companies that I can be investing my time with. And, you know, I have more shots on goal, you know, for these. I can be, you know, focusing on, you know, glue and faith and AI and, you know, some of the other impact, you know, being able to truly say, okay, let's go take a day and do that. Right before, it's like, maybe I could have given you 10 minutes to go focus on that. And it really does give, you know, a lot more freedom to invest and consider.
Faith-driven entrepreneur for teens. You want your teen to pursue success and live with significance. But in a world fueled by greed and self-promotion, they need a better story than what social media sells. Here's the good news. There's a growing movement of faith-driven entrepreneurs using business to solve real problems, serve others, and point to God in every decision. In Faith-Driven Entrepreneur for Teens, Kobe Cotton, Lecrae, and David Platt take students on a global journey, spotlighting real builders in media, tech, real estate, music, and more. In partnership with Pat Lencioni's Working Genius, students discover their God-given strengths, expand their imagination, and spark conversations about life beyond high school. Help your teen dream bigger and build a life of purpose. Learn more about Faith-Driven Entrepreneur for Teens. Visit faithdrivenentrepreneurforteens.org.
Dive in on that. When people have heard a lot about glue, there's been so many different iterations and there's so many faces to it today. For somebody that's new to the conversation, how would you describe Glue?
You know, we are building the faith technology platform for the faith and flourishing ecosystem, right? You know, for that, you know, the analogy I like to use is we're at a Gutenberg moment, right? Where, you know, the printing press, right? You know, Martin Luther, the confluence of those changed history. And will we, with this powerful, you know, most powerful technology cycle of, you know, the modern digital age with AI, are we, the church, going to be captivated, accelerated by that, mission empowered by that? Or are we going to be sitting on the outside, you know, watching the implications that it has on society? Right. And obviously with Glue, we're trying to, you know, position ourselves, you know, that we are riding that wave, shaping that way, and making these incredible capabilities suitable, useful for the faith ecosystem. So that a pastor on Sunday, he is empowered because he has better tools to help him prepare a sermon, to translate it, to, you know, snippetize it, roll it forward into the small studies, to have it available for the three languages that they publish in, you know, and being pushed out with proper analytics, messaging, new service, you know, AI enabled. Right. If you think about, you know, the 7,000 languages that are spoken across the planet today, you know, we really have, you know, the top couple hundred conquered. Right. You know, AI is going to enable us to conquer all of them over the next decade. Wow. What an acceleration of mission, you know, that we're going to be able to accomplish. You know, the church has been, you know, concerned for education forever. Right. You know, and as I'd say, one of my, audacious goals still in front of me is that, you know, over the next decade, decade and a half, that we could educate every child on the planet. Right. And three reasons I believe that we're going to be able to do that. Number one is we'll have connected every community on the planet. Right. We're now at about 60-65% connectivity globally. You know, by 2030, you know, that'll be about 90%. They're connected. You know, second is we'll have conquered language. I will now be able to educate, you know, children anywhere on the planet, right, in their natural language, social, contextually relevant material. And third, by the use of agentic AI, I'll be able to increase teacher productivity dramatically, right? You know, every child will have their own custom AI agent, right, that's supervised and managed by a teacher, but being able to explode the productivity of individual modalities of learning for every child on the planet. Now, to me, this is, you know, just one example of the kind of thing that we as a church are going to be able to do. And if you think about that, you know, if I educate the 300 million children living in poverty today, I think I will have done more to eliminate poverty in the world than any other single thing that you could do. And I believe we can do that in the next decade, decade and a half. That's the power, right, that we have by embracing technology, by embracing AI fully. You know, and Glue wants to be right in the middle of that, shaping you know, technology as a force for good, delivering the most modern capabilities for the faith, you know, and flourishing ecosystem, and being the platform that people trust, right? You know, at the end of the day.
Trust is so much a part of the equation.
Absolutely, right? You know, and if you would say, you know, am I as a ministry going to move my, all of my church operations, all of my ministry operations, you know, well, I give that to one of the big SI companies, you know, Tata, TCS, Infosys, right? You know, McKinsey, you know, well, I don't really trust. Right? Okay. Glue is, we are in your value chain, right? You can trust us, right? Because we're mission aligned with what you're doing. Yes, we can solve many of the security issues, the data issues, and so on for the ecosystem. And we're committed to bringing faith-aligned, trusted AI and tools, you know, on the very front end of the technology bow wave into that ecosystem. That's what we're all about.
One of the things that I find most encouraging about this, we've spent a lot of time with John Irwin and the Wonder Project team and film production side. And one of the things John says is that, you know, the church abandoned the marketplace of film. They abandoned that. It's not that Hollywood, we left. And I think that tragically that's been the church's history. Fear, unknown, we run from. What's so encouraging is that in this moment, you guys are running in. And running in at scale. The question I'd have for you is like, I love what Glue's doing. Let's separate maybe the conversations here because I think there's two important ones. One, how do we support these organizations? And how do you find like a faith-aligned backbone and platform to support the network, the home team, whatever it might be? But then there's also this other conversation of like, how do these principles get into some of these other models? How is there faithful representation kind of in that conversation?
Yeah.
How do you think about the breakdown of those two?
Yeah, and you know, I think they're both related. You know, part of the reason I am very passionate about making Glue a big, meaningful public company is so that we have the capacity to invest. Right. You know, I want us to be big enough that when we show up to the table, it matters.
Yeah.
You know, if we're a bunch of fragmented, you know, little fiefdoms, you know, does Google, Meta, you know, Microsoft, do they care?
No.
You have no throwaway, right? You know, you have no, you know, buying capacity. You have no influence in the technology streams. So getting it big enough, right, that we're speaking for, aggregating enough capacity, you know, driving enough revenue that they care when we show up. So we have to be big enough and a sustainable enough, you know, set of, you know, advertising dollars, technology investments, you know, you know, data center builds and operation and so on, so that we matter. You know, and the reality is our ecosystem is enormous. You know, 350,000 churches, over 150,000 additional organizations that are faith aligned, $1.2 trillion of economic capacity in the U.S. We're big.
It's huge.
But we show up small.
Yeah.
So can we start showing up at least medium, right? Eventually big. Yeah. And then the second aspect to that is,
before you go to that second part, can I jump in with that thought? Because I think there's so much that we miss there. I think so oftentimes in ministry, we keep asking for, oh, we need more, only if we had more, only if we had more. I think to your point, we're the most resourced the church has ever been. Tragically, though, we're probably one of the most disconnected that we've ever been.
And I, you know, the phraseology I use for that is, this is the largest fragmented industry on planet Earth. Right, you know, we're fragmented across denominational bounds, you know, independent bounds, different, you know, fissures of, you know, how we support our ecosystem. Right, you know, if Satan could make us smaller, right, for something this big, I'm not sure what else he'd do. Right, you know, is there all, you know, so how do we start showing up bigger? Right, in it, and you know, for that, you know, that's why I'm really, you know, I want this to be a big company. Right. You know, and with that big company, it's not that, you know, we want to be big just for financial purposes. We want to be big because that's the only way, you know, that our ecosystem can be influential.
Leverage.
Right. You know, for it. And, you know, I mean, you know, we're meeting with some of like the denominations. Right. You know, the denominations don't have digital connectivity to their churches. Right. How can that be? Right. So even within one denomination, they're small. Right. Because they're all the, you know, they're not connected. They're not able to, you know, leverage the resources, you know, or being even able effectively supporting their member churches. You know, so, you know, the fragmentation is on essentially every dimension of our ecosystem. And if we can start making it bigger, right, then we're able to start, you know, really making things happen. Right. Okay, we have better digital platforms. We have, you know, better church databases. We have better marketing programs. And even sometimes, you know, I what do? We go to a Google or a Meta and say, you know, please advertise to our own church members. Right. You know, so they hate us. Right. They're not values aligned. They're not mission aligned. They give us a lousy service. You know, so we pay too much for a lousy service to
use the roads
to our own people.
Connect to our own people. It's crazy.
Right. And what drives the tech companies more than anything else is advertising dollars. So essentially we're fueling them to even further misalign in the values basis with us. So let's start building systems that allow us to keep our energy in our ecosystem and reinforce the strength of our ecosystem. And advertising is just one example, but you know, it goes across every dimension of distribution and, you know, schools, education, healthcare, so on like that. We could be so much bigger than we are, but we don't have the systems connectivity means to do that today. So show up bigger, right? And then influence the whole. And on the second piece, you know, one example of that is we released the Flourishing AI Benchmarks. Let's start measuring the AI models against human flourishing. And there was this foundational work done by Gallup, Baylor, and Harvard on the flourishing AI benchmarks. So let's, they define what human flourishing is. We are putting data sets behind that that we can now measure all of the LLMs. And we're starting to measure, right, the large language model, all the chat services in the industry today. Yeah. Are you good? Are you mediocre? Are you bad on these seven dimensions? And, I've done more benchmarks in my technology career than any human should have ever been associated with. Just done that across, PCs and servers and databases and so on like that. So the rigor of proper benchmarking data, that now says, are you good or bad when you go to OpenAI chat or to Gemini or, Llama, right, associated with it? Because we want those then to start becoming the metrics that all models. Right. And I'll just tell you, there's a stunning little fact. Right. And this will, be published here shortly. You see, do you know what model does the best on human flourishing today?
Well, I can't help but point out my alma mater was involved in a study. So this is a big shout out moment for Baylor. So great to see us coming on the board. But no, unfortunately, I don't.
Yeah. DeepSeek, the Chinese model, does the best on human flourishing.
Wow.
Okay. Now, and you think about that, you're just sort of like, how can that be?
Wow.
Right? So on like that. Right? And there's good technical reasons for it, but I think there's also other aspects to that as well.
Yeah.
And hey, those are the kind of things that we want to start highlighting. Yeah. Not that I want to say that, Google or OpenAI is bad, but I want them to start having metrics to say, how do I get good?
Yeah.
And the absence of bad is not the proof of good.
Yeah.
Right? Because, to us, we're trying to say, we want you to be good on these metrics. And that's a way more powerful statement, right? And just saying, hey, we answered the math score correctly. Great. I'm glad you did. We got the legal scores correctly. Great. I'm glad that you did. But are you causing human flourishing when people use your AI services? To me, that's a goal way higher, way more valuable, and way more important for humanity.
It strikes me, I think of like proxy voting. I think of like just being at the table and standing for those conversations. And I think just the way that like bringing a values-based voice to some of those rooms. And then I think about what you guys are doing just even through that. I think oftentimes we think that to solve the world's greatest problems, we got to start at the top of the deck of Jenga blocks and take them all off the stack. But finding those leveraged points for that conversation, I think, are so important.
Yeah. And when we hear about kids falling in love with their AI chatbot and leading to deranged behavior or even death, those things should hurt our soul, right? But it then should motivate us. Okay, how are we going to make these technologies better? Right. And that should become this driving passion, deep in what we do as technologists. And that's, part of what we're trying to do is this broader mission at Glue, but then catalyzing forces way beyond Glue.
Yeah.
Right.
When you think about this tension, so connecting the one and two buckets, like so much of like Christian ministries, I mean, you sell a book, you sell a resource, you sell those things. But yet you look at some of the richness and the depth of thought and you thought, man, this has got to be in those models. How do we take the finest, deepest thoughts of the church and really inject those in there? What does that look like?
Well, and at least one dimension of that. I think there's multiple dimensions to the question, but one dimension would be, we're just going to train our models on the best stuff.
Yeah.
Right. I remember one time I did a talk, right? And it was Intel Inside, right? And in the talk I says, Intel Inside, the best stuff is inside if you have Intel, right? And then at the end of the talk, I took my shirt and said, Jesus Inside. And I said, that's when you know the best stuff, right, is there. And when you look at the large language models, they're trained on a whole bunch of data. Have we trained it on the good stuff?
Yeah.
Right? And, as I would say, if we're concerned for, teaching a kid how to tie a noose, well, if the instructions for tying the noose are in the model, then at some point you're going to be able to induce the model to tell you how to tie the noose.
Yeah.
Right? Associated. Well, if I haven't put that in the model, I don't have to worry about it coming out of the model.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, have you put the good stuff into the model? And part of our objective is, hey, those are great Christian works. Let's make sure that's part of the training data that we're using for the foundational models. Because then I know if good stuff went in, I know good stuff is going to come out.
More and more pastors are realizing the church can be a launching pad, equipping entrepreneurs to build redemptively and make a real difference. We've made it simple to serve the entrepreneurs in your church and your city. No cost, no catch. Get access to a ready-to-go video series, templates, and tools to host an 8-week foundation group right in your church. Just register with us, and we'll even direct local entrepreneurs to your community. We're building a network of 250 partnering churches across the country, each one featured as a go-to hub for faith-driven entrepreneurs in the area. Want to join the movement? All it takes is a 10-minute call with our team. Visit the link below to get started.
Talk about that in terms of like the good stuff going in, good stuff coming out. The church, you know, there's been times where we've had great rigorous debate that have fueled on things, but there's also sometimes the smallest of thing can throw off the conversation.
Yeah.
Where are we in this journey? Because everybody has to understand we're in still the early stages of this, but where do we get to a point where the good stuff comes out and we look at it theologically, we look at this and we say, okay, that passes muster.
Well, and one of the things that we are seeking to do would be, let's try to get too denominational, but let's take, a denominational view, would have a very specific perspective on a topic, right? Whatever that may be. Hey, we're a non-instrumentalist Christian church and we have a very fundamental view here. And, over here we have a broader Presbyterian view, or maybe this model is even, being used by, let's say a Catholic. Right, who has different views on Mary and, so on. But when you look at the core training of the model, they're almost identical across those three with very small differences. And it turns out that the combination of prompt and rag and some of the other technical capabilities, you're a Catholic. Okay, let me give you the Catholic alignment, right? 99% of the underlying training data and the model weights or so on are exactly the same. Yeah. And, I know that you're a Catholic. Oh, great. I'm going to give you that answer. Why should I offend you as a Catholic user, right, associated with it, right? And when the Catholics, when this synod pushes this out, to their members, they can feel very comfortable. The core training was good, based on thousands of years and all of the current data that we have on theologically aligned, faith aligned data. And we're going to go, do the right prompt engineering and the right rag, and make sure that we've satisfied your denominational requirements, and the technology allows us to do that.
Yeah.
So in this sense, I think we actually have the opportunity to unify the core and then, create environments that meet different unique denominational requirements. But even further than that, would be, we'll put it in your voice. And as I would like to say, imagine you're a mega church pastor. Great. We'll have it respond in your voice, with your video, with your sermons, with your snippets when you taught on that exact subject, right? Combined with that exact biblical passage. We can make this like so great to expand the potential platform of ministry. And then I'll translate it into Portuguese and make you a native Portuguese speaker as well, right? It really is thrilling that way what we're going to be able to do. And if we can focus on, the fact that we are so aligned on the vast preponderance of the underlying questions, the values of life, the flourishing AI study, and then, we go create the minor customizations for the different markets.
Yeah.
I really do think this can be one of the most powerful points of unification, for the church, literally, since Gutenberg. And that's why I like to think about this as a Gutenberg moment, right? You say, the most powerful entrepreneur innovator of the day happened to be Hans Gutenberg.
Yeah.
He did an amazing thing. And then it was used by the church to transform all of Europe and all of the church.
Yeah.
What an opportunity. I think AI is exactly that moment that we have in front of us.
I think it's so fascinating because a friend we were talking about this idea in terms of like what the Gutenberg moment did. It kind of normalized that, hey, we should be a literate society consuming this, reading it. But before there was so much oral history and tradition. And it is interesting to think like just how normative it has become that we think, Well, everybody should have the scripture in God's word in your hands to read it. And it is fascinating to think what could be normative 10, 20, 50, 100 years from now at this hinge moment of things.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to the language example, right? Every human on the planet will have a native language, speech to speech, speech to text, text to speech, text to text version that is socially language relevant, available to them of God's word.
Yeah.
You know, go into all the world, right? Right. You know, to me, it doesn't get much better than that. And AI is going to allow us to accelerate the realization of that by decades. So I'm pretty thrilled about some of the opportunities that sit in front of me to make that happen.
Hey, I want to close with this last thought. Connecting people and connecting the kingdom has been a big part of your DNA. And somewhere along the way, it feels like God got a hold of that idea, whether it's what happened in the Bay Area, your intentionality there. Just make the case of just like the season of life you're in, the importance of working together, connecting. What was that moment? What was that light bulb for you where it said, gosh, you know what? As you said, pretty hard charging, we're driving. But when was that moment when you realized, now we've got to connect and do more together than we do apart?
The you know, when Linda and I took the job to become the VMware CEO, and removing, you know, we had a tremendous 3 years in Boston. I was president at EMC. We're close to my family in Pennsylvania. You know, it was really, you know, just say a wonderful 3 years, you know, for us. And then we were given the opportunity to lead VMware. And when we came, you know, back to the Bay Area, you know, one, Linda did not want to come back to the Bay Area. You know, as I say, she just scratched and clawed across the nation, right? You know, but all of her grandchildren congregated around us in the Bay Area. So she was blessed, right? In ways, right? You know, that we couldn't have even dreamed at the time, because when we moved to the Bay Area, none of our kids, you know, the grandkids weren't born yet. You know, it was really one of those where it's like, okay, you know, that became a magical honoring moment from God. But when I also took the job as a VMware CEO, you know, I had this, you know, thought in the back of my mind, could we have a Bay Area movement, right? And I had been associated with, you know, the New York movement and, you know, what Palau had done and Portland. So, you know, God had planted this in the back of my mind, and it's sort of like, okay, you've given me a platform as a CEO of a company, right? But what is the kingdom purpose of having that platform? And I'll say, you know, while it was never far from, you know, the idea of being connected and relevant and so on, but that was the light bulb moment, right? And when we started TBC, Transforming the Bay, you know, with Christ, and seeing this aggregation of energy around the Bay Area, and when I tell people that we have 900 churches participating in TBC, you know, today, it's like, you thought we had 9 churches in all of the Bay Area. I got 900 churches, right, you know, participating, you know, and seeing the power of that in one of the least churched areas in the nation, right? You know, woohoo! Yeah. You know, this is hard ground. And that's where God shows up. You know, and so that was the light bulb moment for me. And now it's just sort of like everything just sort of keeps, you know, there's just more connectivity, more value, right, associated with it, more kingdom purpose that emerges from it. And, you know, we're 12 years into TBC, and for it, you know, I think the greatest days for Bay Area and, you know, truly revival coming from the Bay is yet in front of us.
You know, I can't help but say the thing that I love most, spending time with Gary last week, and you hit on this subtly, it's transforming the Bay for Christ to with Christ. And I think there's so much in that idea. We talk a lot about it on Faith-Driven Entrepreneurs, like, how do we do this and know God more fully by being in this adventure? And I think that for versus with, there's something deep there.
You know, and, you know, Gary really, Gary is the, you know, leader of TBC for us. And when he took the job, that was that one word, right, was an important aspect. And I won't say that I was, maybe it was, you know, divinely inspired, right, when I named TBC, but it was pretty close to divinely inspired, right, because I, you know, I debated that exact phraseology. Right. Because it's like, no, we can't go before him. We can't go behind. You know, we are going with him to transform his field.
Yeah.
Right. You know, this is all about his field.
Yeah.
In the Bay Area, and you know, the 8.5 million souls that are in the Bay. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, they need Christ. You know, they have influence on the world. They have economic capacity. Right. You know, this is so good, right, in that respect. And hey, you know, every day we see more kingdom fruit happening because of it.
Pat, I'm grateful for you. The idea that you've invited all of us along this journey with you, with God, to experience this movement, this conversation from 20 years ago to today, it's such an encouragement for many generations that are following this trailblazing and saying, hey, how can we do more of this together? So thank you for everything you do for the movement, for this conversation. It's great to be with you.
Amen. Thank you.
And so friends, if you're listening to this, my encouragement is a couple of things. One, find that thing that you want to lean hard into. We all go through seasons of life. As Pat talked about, there are different times and seasons and moments for family and other things. And of course, those things are important. But find that thing that wakes you up in the morning, that wrong you feel called to make right. Bring that purpose, that intentionality into your business. One of the ways to do that is to visit this website called Solving the World's Greatest Problems. It's a great place to discover whether it's for you, for your family, or maybe for your business, some missional alignment and place to connect on this journey. So check that out. Also encourage you to check out some of Pat's books. It's a great way just to be encouraged as we balance these things as entrepreneurs on this journey. So great to be with you. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Come for content, stay for community. Join a faith-driven entrepreneur group online or in person. No cost, no catch. Visit faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. That's faithdrivenentrepreneur.org.